Yeah, so it is a fine line, in which why a lot of syndicators, when they do their webinars, they typically mention like, hey, like consult with your tax advisor. Like they'll advertise it as such, but like there is a bit of fine print from that standpoint as well, because with and so if we're just talking about the equity cash flow from the building itself, the depreciation is going to reduce that portion of it, potentially down to, like I say, less zero or even to a negative from that standpoint there. Now, if you were a passive investor, if you have other passive investments, like generating passive income, you're able to potentially offset that. Well, you're not potentially, you will be able to offset your passive income and passive gains with the losses from your rental property. So that's a incentive there from that perspective. And then potentially, depending on your adjusted gross income, and if you and you mean, and even though your name may not be a real estate professional, you may have an opportunity to even offset some of your W-2 or self-employment income as well.
Have you ever asked yourself what can go wrong when investing in apartments? What challenges do investors face when dealing with such a large asset class? Well, on the No BS Apartment Investing Podcast, we place expert professionals on the hot seat, ask them the tough questions that may be running through your mind, all while removing the fluff that comes with apartment investing. We aim to put your mind at ease while showing you that investing in apartments is the way to financial freedom. And now for your host, Mark Caesar.
Welcome back, everyone, to this episode of the No BS Apartment Investing Podcast. And today we have Mr. Larry Pendleton with us, who is a fellow real estate investor and a CPA with a passion for adding value to fellow investors. And on today's episode, Larry will be sharing with us all the tax tips and tax secrets that you fellow investors might be missing out on, you know, that can help save taxes or that can help, you know, put more money back into your pocket. So that said, Larry, welcome to the show, sir.
Appreciate you, Mark. Grateful to be up here.
Yeah, I appreciate you, man. I know we had you on the meetup a while back, and, you know, it was a very great time speaking with you, and we had to have you back on the show to educate us. So let's jump right into it, man.
Oh, there's definitely a lot of opportunity. So always helpful, always grateful opportunity to add value. So ready to get going.
Nice, nice. I appreciate it. So give us a bit of background on what you do. I know you're, you know, investor and CPA. You know, tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, so CPA by trade, been doing tax strategy and tax consulting and preparation for over a decade. Started investing myself in real estate roughly about 6 years ago now, from that standpoint. And I definitely saw opportunity, and just from consulting with my mentors, it seemed like this, it kind of made more sense to kind of combine the two and primarily focus on professionals in real estate, whether it's as other investors or contractors, agents, people interested in getting into real estate. So it was just saw a huge opportunity to combine those worlds, because a lot of what I'm implementing is stuff that I've done for myself or I'm on the path of doing from that standpoint. So been a flipper, or I'd still do some flips every now and then. Not my primary focus. Primary focus is more buy and hold rental properties, like from a long-term perspective. Primarily multifamily, and then if it is going to be single family, we get more into corporate housing, whether it is Airbnbs, housing for travel nurses, and opportunities like that, and also looking into new development as well, as prices have been just ridiculous as all we have been experienced these past couple of years. So opportunities where like it's cheaper to build it, and just kind of demand your own comps from there. And just adjusting to the wave of what real estate is taking us on at the moment.
Nice, nice. So what exactly like drew you to real estate? You know, you said that you're a, you know, tax professional by profession, but what, you know, captivated you to say, hey, let me add real estate as a leg in my, you know, in my career?
It was actually my partner with PC Financials, Terrion Conner, because he was already in real estate since 2012. So he already had a few properties going in. So just kind of helping with his tax strategy and then other clients that were in real estate. So you start to see those tax savings per se. And then also just get an understanding of like how involved were they? Because at the time, I mean, I either had a full-time job and working and building the business or no full-time job building the business. And it's like that aspect of passive cash flow became rather appealing to me from that standpoint there. As we all know, it's not completely passive. There's a lot of work, but it's not W-2 building business type of work from that standpoint there. So just having that strong network around me and that kind of drew my appeal and saw how the numbers work and took off from there.
Cool. So like what is the driving factor that, you know, once you added real estate into the portfolio, as a leg, like what is the driving factor that, you know, motivates you to do both aspects of, you know, from the tax standpoint and from the real estate standpoint? Like what is the burning why?
Well, I do have my own personal mission is to help as many people achieve financial freedom through real estate and taxes. And then within that is just I feel like we just kind of got born into this matrix per se of go to school, get a job and retire. And it's like, I mean, people want to do more with their lives. They're typically hamstring on the amount of money they got coming in, how it's coming in, trading time for money. And as well as being hit a lot with the taxes, so that aspect of especially personally, like just kind of seeing my dad growing up and working a whole bunch of hours, and I was never in need or wanted anything, so I'm not complaining about that. But it's just to see somebody work that hard and lose a lot of money with the taxes from that standpoint, just to provide for his family, it was like okay, like there's another way around it than you. You read certain books and you hear about the Robert Kiyosakis and the Michael Blancs of the world and say, okay, let's like see what this real estate can possibly do in the aspect of like, hey, I can be chilling on the beach and still getting cash flow from these rental properties and I'm not involved because I put a team and system in place to ensure everything is going smoothly from that standpoint there. So that aspect of just wanting to help people like probably similar to my dad and as well as myself is just kind of a lot of that trading time for money so we can more of us can go after our purpose and mission in life.
Nice. I like it. So you did allude to the earlier that you had your hand in flipping as well. And now you're strictly, doing rentals for passive income. So let's jump into the tax talk a bit now. You know, I'm not tax savvy. I leave that to the professionals like you. But, you know, I know a bit of, you know, when flippers, when they buy a house, they put force the appreciation and so forth like that. And they get a chunk of profit, let's say, you know, 30, 40, 50 grand. Why is it that they get taxed at a higher rate compared to people who invest passively? They're able to offset those capital gains taxes, so as they're called.
That's a great question, and the reason why is because how the property is treated in the IRS eyes, because it's meant to be sold, meant to be sold quickly. The IRS treated it as inventory, like no different than if you were selling clothes or whatever. Knickknack, whatever, from that standpoint there. So the fact that his inventory is kind of wrapped into what they call a ordinary income driven business or active income driven business, which is subject to FICA taxes from that standpoint. Those are your self-employment taxes that typically if you're a W-2 employee, like you pay half and your employer pays half. Now, if you're running a self-employed business, then that full 15.3% as of today is all applied to you as the employee and the employer. So you get this big check. You kind of net everything out, and then whatever flushes through, like that is what's hit, like on top of whatever tax bracket and your effective tax rate is. So that plus, hey, you got this additional 15.3% that you got to deal with as well. And when you're talking about rental properties, like it's not considered as inventory, it's considered real property. And rental real estate itself can see is seen as per se passive, which that means is that it's not subject to FICA taxes. So you don't have that additional tax that flippers will come across.
Gotcha. So would you say that the IRS is more pro to people actually holding the asset opposed to, you know, trading in at for, you know, for at a shorter point of time, or what exactly?
Yeah, if you kind of look and follow the tax code itself, like you have to assume yes from that standpoint there, because the tax code itself is just an incentive plan to get people to move a certain way. You want people to buy houses, you throw in the mortgage interest deduction. You want people to have more kids, you throw in the child tax credit. You want people to invest in rental properties and provide more rental, because more likely the masses will probably be renters than actual homeowners. You add stuff like depreciation, which is just allowing the investor to recoup some of the cost of the building basis itself over an extended period of time. So it's tough not to say yes to that question, just how severely flip income is taxed compared to rental income.
Gotcha. So you touched on a word that even I try to wrap my head around, which is depreciation. Mm-hmm. Now, can you tell us how does depreciation work in real estate and the benefit it has for those who are either actively investing in you know, rental properties or multifamily, as well as those who are passively investing? And right. Can you break that down in, you know, the simplest term for the people in the back who may go over their heads?
So the best way to kind of see depreciation is that unlike a car, which is a depreciating asset itself, rental real estate is considered is appreciating. Like typically the value is always going up from that perspective there. So what the depreciation is, kind of going back to what we mentioned earlier, the tax code is an incentive plan. So to incentivize people to invest into rental properties and provide rental housing for the masses. Okay, you pay whatever amount of money for that property. The land itself is not depreciating because it doesn't really devalue. You can't increase it. It's just land. So once you break out that portion, you just have what they call the basis of the building itself. Like that's the cost itself. So if you bought something for $1 million, let's just hypothetically say that $800,000 is actually the building, the value of the building per the IRS eyes from that perspective there, depending on the land value percentage. So now depreciation is say, okay, now that you have this, because you're providing housing for the masses, you can recoup the cost of the building for residential real estate 27 and a half years. So basically take the 800,000 divided by 27 and a half, and now you got your depreciation over that extended period from there. And to a point that you can actually find ways to accelerate depreciation and bonus depreciation, all that good stuff there. So, but that's kind of the one of the simplest ways, that you're just recouping the cost of the building basis over a certain period of time, and you get that as a deduction on your tax return.
Gotcha. So do passive investors, those who are just, bringing funds into a project and have no say so in the day to day, do they get that benefit of depreciation as well? And how does that work for them?
Now, there is a difference between depreciation and tax loss per se. So that same building, you're operating in the black. So you have a net income from that standpoint there. But with our tax system, you are taxed at the net amount from there. So depreciation is a non-operating expense. Like no matter what you do to the building, depreciation is going to be whatever it is, plus any major repairs and stuff that you've done. So it's a below NOI expense. So now it can potentially take your net operating income. It's going to reduce it. Can it reduce it to zero? And can it reduce to a potential loss? So it's beneficial level one from that perspective, because you had a number there that you was going to be taxed at, but now it's reduced even further, and it was no money out of pocket to that had to be done. And most of the time, you get 100% benefit of depreciation, even though you only put 20, 25, 30% down on the building itself. So that's one of the benefits that even from a passive investor standpoint, there is that whatever distributions you're getting, like, okay, you're actually going to show depending how the waterfall structure and if there's a preferred return and all that stuff. But like, if it's talking about the actual operations of the building itself, now you're looking at a lesser amount than what was actually operating at. Now the tax loss per se, let's say it does reduce to a tax loss, the passive investor, it depends on if they can actually claim the losses on multiple factors, if they're a real estate professional, and if they can prove material participation with their own portfolio that they are actively involved with. So the if you passively involved in someone's syndication, that wouldn't count because you're not making any management decisions, you're not doing any of the property management rehab work. So you can group those losses with other offsetting other passive income, but you may not be able to offset your W-2, any ordinary business income, especially if you're a flipper as well, from that standpoint there. So it's definitely a thing where you want to consult with your tax advisor to see where you stand on possibly having these tax losses not only offset your passive income, but also offset your non-passive income as well.
So basically, if let's say if I am a passive investor and you know you have an opportunity and to buy the shares and the opportunity is you know let's say minimum of $50,000, throw that number out there, and I am not a real estate professional, I am a mechanic or a banker, and I have a basic understanding. I'm sophisticated enough to read the numbers and understand what I'm getting into. And you sell me the opportunity and I invest $50,000 into the deal. So how will I be incentivized outside of, the returns and so forth? How would I be incentivized on the taxes? Because we do hear a lot that for passive investors, you get the tax breaks, you get this, you get that. But can you explain in your perspective the story behind that? How would I get a tax break or incentivized on the tax standpoint?
Yeah, so it is a fine line, and which why a lot of syndicators, when they do their webinars, they typically mention like, hey, like consult with your tax advisors, like they'll advertise it as such, but like there is a bit of fine print from that standpoint as well, because with so if we're just talking about the equity cash flow from the building itself, the depreciation is going to reduce that portion of it potentially down to, like I said, less zero or even to a negative from that standpoint there. Now, if you're a passive investor, if you have other passive investments, like generating passive income, you're able to potentially offset that. You will be able to offset your passive income and passive gains with the losses from your rental property. So that's a incentive there from that perspective. And then potentially, depending on your adjusted gross income, and even though your name may not be a real estate professional, you may have an opportunity to even offset some of your W-2 or self-employment income as well. So there's incentives depending on your situation, and it's always crucial to talk to your tax advisor after hearing these webinars from syndicates or even beforehand so that you kind of know what you're getting into. Because more often that your syndicates aren't, they will admit that they're not CPAs or they're not tax advisors. They just know that here is this benefit that they're going to provide to the investors there. Now, it's also important to mention that those losses, even though you may not be able to claim them, they don't just disappear. What they do is called, they're suspended and rolled forward to future years to potentially offset future passive income and passive gains. So that becomes another incentive, because with all syndications, the property is going to be sold. It's going to be sold for a gain, and then you're going to take part in that gain. You're going to be taxed on that gain. If you have all these suspended passive losses that's been rolled forward, that's going to help offset some of that gain there. So from that perspective, like I said, you do have that benefit. Now you do have syndications that, I mean, most of them now, I don't know any that don't offer some type of preferred return from that perspective. And preferred returns is just a guaranteed payment based off not really the operations of the building itself. It's just like the investors like, hey, the syndicate's like, we're going to provide this preferred return. Now that's not offset. That's considered active income. And it's not going to be offset. It doesn't offset by depreciation or tax losses from that standpoint there. So you also have to be kind of understanding how all that full picture wise is going to affect your tax return. So from a tax perspective, it's also still important to know that does the investment itself make sense return wise from you before we start talking about taxes? Cause we don't want that tax tail wagging the investment dog. If the investment makes sense, then okay, are you potentially paying some taxes on it? Potentially, but it could still be worth it in the long run there.
Gotcha. That's good information. So what are some ways for people to build a tax plan in their investments from your personal experience?
Yeah, just getting with your tax advisor, and yes, that's going to cost, and getting all your investments together. Like, hey, this is potentially going to do this year, and this is not a before April 15th discussion. If it is, you're talking about the new year. You're not talking about the year that passed from that perspective there. So, like, whether, and most likely, I say whether it's mid year, just kind of getting an idea of, okay, here's the different investment you got going on, what's that potentially going to look like, or someone does present a deal to you, that's a good time to meet with your tax advisor and say, hey, I'm looking at this. They're claiming this, and this. What's my potential tax implications related to it, and how would that affect everything else? If you got pay raises, or you started a business, or you had a child, like all that plays a factor. So just to kind of know what the potential tax implications are going to be. So putting that plan together is taking the time to gather these documents and working with your advisor on what's that tax hit or tax benefit could be for investing into this deal.
Gotcha. So pretty much it's worth paying whatever it costs to have an advisor that will advise you the right way.
Right. Because, I mean, I think a lot of people for most people, like they assume like the person is preparing my taxes, and it's like the tax prep is just the tax prep itself is just based off of what was happening last year. If you're trying to get more planning and this stuff is, You're stepping up, you're leveling up from that standpoint there. Like, you're no longer eating at McDonald's. Like, you're going to Ruth Chris now, depending on where you're going to. So it's to a point, like, you're getting what you're paying for. And as long as that's clearly communicated, then all of that should be helpful and also a factor into, here's these tax savings that my advisor is also able to add value with, because they're recommending these things or telling me to avoid this from that perspective there.
Gotcha. Now, I'm not sure if you're, you know, able to answer this, but feel free to give me a shot. If you can't, just let me know. But is there an entity that works best from a tax standpoint where I invested? And is there one that, you know, we as investors should avoid?
As investors into real estate, you definitely want to avoid corporations. S or C. Well, this start with the S corp. I mean, because C corps are kind of more for your larger companies, and so you really don't want those properties in. You don't want your assets from rental real estate in there, especially from S corps definitely more than any other ones, because S corps, you're required to pay yourself a reasonable salary, which means you're paying FICA taxes on your income. Now, if you're receiving passive income that's not subject to self-employment taxes, you are inherently taking income not subject to FICA taxes and now you're moving it into an entity that require, and now you're making it subject to FICA taxes from that standpoint there, depending on how big your investments are from there. So more often than not, an LLC will suffice for most passive investors from that standpoint there. It all passes through to their personal tax return. I have not seen a situation where a C corp has been valuable, but I mean there's like I say, it just doesn't make sense. You're trapping losses in there, and unless you're trapping potential tax losses in there, that's not going to pass through to you from a C corp perspective. So typically, it's really just keeping it simple. LLC, whether it's with your trust, if you have a trust or whatever, will suffice from that standpoint there.
Gotcha. Good to know. Now, I know there is, I've always heard this from different coaching programs that I've been part of or other investors, that there is a incentive when children are employed by an entrepreneur within the frame of their business. Can you like provide some clarification into that? Like how are kids paid? How are the children paid? How are they taxed? If they are taxed at all, like what is the mindset behind that?
Yeah, so when you're talking about children that you can claim, once they reach that 17, so you're kind of exceeding. So we're talking about 17 below, where the entity itself is solely owned by the parents or one of the parents. From that standpoint, there the children are excluded from FICA taxes. So you can actually set up a salary, and as of today is $12,000 and some change that up to that you can pay them, and they potentially would not pay any taxes at all on that because it's below, it's at or below the standard deduction for the year. We'll see what the changes are at that point. And like I said, they don't have the FICA tax as well. So like they're not going to get a refund. They're not going to pay any taxes. It's just, but they receive $12,000 or whatever reasonable salary up to that amount that the parents decide to pay them from there. And the parents or the custodians get the deduction in their business from that standpoint there. So at a high level, that's the benefit of how you, and you're actually treating them like employees. Like there's an employee agreement involved in there, and there's actual roles and responsibilities, and their time being tracked from that standpoint. There's a reasonable salary in place. Like if you was going out and going to hire somebody to do whatever, it's cleaning up the office or clean up one of your rental properties or filing paperwork, how much would you have paid somebody else to do that? And as long as you're within that ballpark range, it's not going to be the exact number, then it's considered a reasonable salary. There's actually money coming from your business account going to their account. So you're showing actual paper trail, and like this because just how you pay employees from that standpoint. So it's like I said, those are the benefits of taking income from your higher tax bracket and it passing it down to your kids. And for most of you, you're keeping that income and that wealth per se flowing through your family from there.
Gotcha. So I know you said it's up to 17. Like, is there a minimum age where we can employ our children for something like this?
There's not a documented minimum age, but it's just, I have a 2 and a 5 year old. Okay, I more likely than not they're not going to be filing papers that would deem to be reasonable and worth paying anyone to do from that standpoint. There, it'll actually cost me money in a negative way from that standpoint there. So like I say, you're almost looking at it from like the Goober baby. The Google baby had a paycheck and I believe it was roughly $5,000-$6,000 from that standpoint there. So can you do advertising with your kids and like, hey, you're in this commercial? And if you're doing all of that, that makes sense. We're like, okay, you're trying to portray yourself as this family person on your commercials and you're paying your 2-month-old a salary. Like say, it has to be reasonable. The substance has to make sense from that standpoint there and document it in a way where like it's audit proof from that standpoint, because like I say you will be drawing red flags from that standpoint, but doesn't mean you're doing anything wrong unless you have your 2 month old on the payroll for sweeping. And it's like, okay, that doesn't make sense at all. Or you just kind of begging to be audited and penalized from that standpoint there. So not so much of a minimum age per se. It's just, of course, being in accordance with labor laws and all of that. So you just want to make sure you're all in compliance with all that stuff.
Gotcha. So folks, don't take your 2 month old to, don't hire them as a contractor, go swing some hammers and a rental for you, because that's right. An automatic red flag.
Yeah, I can take my 2 year old to my property. Like, I'm not paying him anything because there's nothing he's going to do besides just wreck shop more often than not.
Gotcha. Now, we always ask this question to everyone who comes on the show. Can you share a story or a situation where in your journey, whether as a CPA or as an investor, where something just went totally left field that wasn't expected? And can you tell us what went wrong? How did it affect your business? And how did you manage the situation? And of course, how did it help you become a savvier investor and a better accountant, depending on where the coin falls?
I guess, I know we talked before we started recording, but I mean, I'll even go as current as now where, as I mentioned before, like I'm part of one group in the midst of selling a 16 unit in Newport News, Virginia. The buyer today walked away from the deal. There were tenant issues, like our team got shifted around and some people move, and especially our main boots on the ground move. So it was like, okay, we don't have the team in place to properly asset manage this thing. Even though it was 30 minutes away from me, it's just, okay, that wasn't my like particular role with the team itself. So that's why we kind of went on sale. The market is still crazy. So it was like, okay, we were able to possibly even sell it for what we thought we would get 3.5 years from now. It was a 5 year hold from that perspective. So just this morning we sent out the letter to fire our property manager because we need to bring somebody in that's going to be more hands-on with the matter, considering our team dynamic from that standpoint. We've already reached out to lenders and just having open communications with our investors as well. As like, here the deal, we're already drafting letters and so that aspect of it, of just having to be on your toes because we was not expecting for it to be to them to walk away. Like, even with the known issues with the property itself, and most of it is just tenant turnover and all the issues that COVID has brought, with just making it difficult with evictions and whatnot. And it kind of goes back to how me personally, I was kind of to speak for myself instead of the whole team. Is it okay if you're going to bring property management team, how vetted are they? I mean, we got recommendations. They got some thumbs up. I mean, no one's going to be 100% like it smiles all the way around from other investors. But the aspect of like, hey, like, things are kind of falling through the cracks. Like why we're having to kind of point these things out. And that's all part of asset management as well, and making sure you got the plan in place, and making sure so you're just ensuring that the property management is following the plan that your team has. So making sure you have a solid plan in place, the dynamics of your team as well. What is everyone's role per se? Where it's easy to just try to keep the team small and for a bigger pot per se, but you have to know yourself. You have to know what you got going on. Like, I have a wife and two kids. I'm building PC Financials. I'm part of other investment groups. I have my own personal portfolio. How much time do I really have to put into this besides my role as the numbers person doing the financials from that standpoint there? So that's the learning points from that. Yeah, I guess from kind of a Rob Khalif aspect of the nose getting bloody within multifamily, where it's not all just like high returns and all that. So it's a difficult conversation we're going to have with investors. Like, we thought we was going to sell, we're not. Like, hey, we're going to get this refinance in place. We're going to get some capital, some of their initial capital return to them from there, and then start distributions all over again. Once we kind of get new management in place and the property restabilize again from that standpoint. So that's basically, I say that as recently as I said today, it's gone down. And I'm pretty sure after this call, I'll be back on the phone following up on the lenders that reached back out to me on terms and whatnot and get that going as well.
That is amazing, man. I mean, it's not a story that happened in the past. It's something that's happening right now. But it definitely shows that, you know, that's what happened in real estate. At the 11th hour, things can just go left. But as long as you have a solid plan and you know how to pivot and, you know, put contingencies in place, that's what makes you a better investor, a better problem solver. And of course, having those hard discussions with investors are not always easy. They're not fun. But they need to be had. You need, you know, especially if they're investing money with you, they're trusting you with their hard-earned cash. So you want to let them know, okay, this is what went wrong. And you want to show them that, hey, all right, we have a plan. We have a plan B, plan C in the event of something happening. So yeah, I appreciate you sharing that story with us, man. And I hope our listeners definitely learn from it. Now, what is the biggest failure that you've learned from to date?
The biggest failures? Just personally, or just in general, from that standpoint,
it could be either or both. You choose.
I'm a former, probably sometimes still considered big dumb jock. So I'm really big on teams aspect of it. It's just like just building out the right teams. Like for me, kind of ends up being one of the bigger failures. And what kind of leads to that failure is the failure of understanding yourself. And I know I mentioned before, but I said I can't get – nothing else really matters until you kind of know, like, who you are, what you can bring to the table, how you can add value if you're trying to overly extend yourself in these situations where – you're dealing with other people's capital or you're dealing with people's livelihoods when places they're living at. It's like, okay, like – It's good to have the right team in place once you know where you can be of value, and then you partner with people who add value to the places that you are, whether you want to call it weak or just not as strong as. It's a really good book, Who Not How, that kind of addresses that, and just finding the right who's so that you can do bigger deals, do bigger things, because you're not so trying to spread yourself so thin, and that you have to keep it small because you can only do but so much from that standpoint there. So that aspect of just knowing who you are becomes a big failure if that's not done correctly, because that leads to not putting the right team in place, and that goes into property management or just buying the wrong property from that standpoint and not trusting your numbers. So it starts with you personally. Everything, like whatever issues that we're going with, like I always gotta make sure I look internally to make sure where I gone wrong at in this, and then okay, we can start to build out a plan. But until that's addressed, it's always going to be somebody else's fault or whatever. Like, no, this falls on me for these particular reasons. Now, how do we address it from here?
Gotcha. I like that. Now, as both a CPA and an investor, do you have a least favorite part of your job that you hate or you wish you didn't have to do?
As a CPA, like I said, I enjoy tax season, and other CPAs would probably understand where I'm coming from. Is like there's tax season, then there's tax filing season. Like tax season is January through December. It's all year round because everything gotcha. You're doing is going to affect your taxes. January through April is just tax filing season, like and is based off the past. So there's not much strategy from that standpoint there. So it's like, okay, where there's this crunch time, but these 4 months a year, even though you can get an extension until later in the year, but it is this huge press to kind of get everything done in this small time frame. So, but I enjoy the engagement of meeting people and helping them with their tax situations and bleeding in with what their real estate strategies are as well. And so that it all kind of works one another and stuff offsets one another. And this is going to be used in the future and thinking 30, 40 years from now, especially if they're doing retirement accounts from that standpoint there. So like I said, that aspect of tax filing season is always a bit of a dread. It comes with the territory, but it comes along with like, okay, I'm actually still helping somebody with their tax situation as well. I mean, as an investor, it's always that part of okay, I've never done a deal where I lost investors' capital. Returns may have been short, but I'm always pushing and making sure we're running these deals a certain way where investors' capital is always protected from that standpoint there, which can be a bit nerve-wracking, but also exciting at the same time as well. So I like the aspect of the property management, and because I'm an introvert, so like that aspect of like I gotta deal with these large group of people, like especially if it's negative from them, especially with contractors and all of that, and it's I'm not the brow beaten type of person. Like I try to be as happy-go-lucky as much as I can, but I have my strong arms, even though they may be small to me, to handle that stuff.
Gotcha. Understood, man. I mean, I agree. That's honest. You're being honest, so I like that. Now, if you had to give, let's say, top three tips from your experiences on both sides of the coin to people who are looking to get into the investing space, as newbies or people who are aspiring or already seasoned, like what would those top tips be from both perspective of what you do?
Think beyond yourself. This isn't golf. This isn't a solo sport per se. And I'm cautious even to say a sport. Like it's an event that involves having the right people. So once you can think outside yourself, it's like, okay, like what? And I know I'm kind of repeating myself, but like it's still very important to know where your value is. Think beyond yourself of finding the right people and build that team as well. And then I said at the end of the day, as an accountant, like it's easy for me. It's like the numbers don't lie. Trust in the numbers. Like I say, you can't be overly speculative with this. If that's the case, you might as well just be flipping properties from that standpoint there. And I'm always in that focus on cash flow. So once you can now find your value, find the team, and then find what's going to bring you cash flow, and within the numbers kind of work towards that. Whether you increase rents or not, then you're kind of set up for a brighter future within real estate.
Nice. Like it. Now, what's next up for you, PC Financial and Rise Equity Group?
Yeah, so PC Financial, like I said, we're in the midst of kind of our slow growth per se. Because ironically enough, when I left public accounting, I vowed never to open up an accounting company, and I ended in the streets kept calling me. So here I am. but I'm gonna stick to my vow of like not having anything too large. So like I meet every person that wants to potentially become a client, and if it's not a good fit, like I got plenty of referrals to pass on to from that standpoint there, because This is my value where I can kind of get into the foot in the door of a lot of different investment groups, including whether it was Rise Equity or Multifamily Masters or by Brandon Profit Group with Brian Chavis. Like, it's just all these different groups that I've been fortunate to be connected with because of the value that I have from PC Financial. So we'll probably get into more into the consultation for these groups, doing a lot more with cost segregation for a lot of smaller property investors. From that standpoint, there is the huge tax savings that can create for people with driving up their depreciation or front loading depreciation per se. And then with Rise and all the other different groups I'm associated with, it's all about just finding the right deal from that perspective there. Still in the midst of, I mean, stuff is still, markets are still hot. I guess it was the most recent news about potential 3 interest hikes in 2022. So we'll see if that get the prices down or more reasonable from that standpoint there. We're also looking into certain groups of actual new development as well. And possibly building out communities, not just a house here or there. Like right now, we're looking to possibly build 70 houses on a few acres of land, and be able to provide affordable housing from that standpoint for your everyday person there. So, like I said, other opportunities like that from there, like more multifamily, a lot more with short term rentals. And housing for traveling nurses and other physicians with COVID and their needs for clean, affordable, safe housing as well. We want to make sure that they're getting taken care of throughout this pandemic.
Nice, I like that. That's definitely being a goal giver for sure. Now, Larry, as we come to an end here, if people wanted to connect with you and learn more about what you do, how would they go about doing so?
Yeah, I'm on LinkedIn, I'm on Facebook, I'm on Instagram, Larry Pendleton, probably Larry Pendleton CPA is all. Try to make myself as easy to find as possible, or easy to find. People are happy to reach out with my cell phone number, 757-535-8592. Always interested to connect on an initial introduction call to just to see if there's a opportunity to connect and potentially work together, whether as vendor client or potential partners or investors on deals and grow from there.
Sounds good. And I appreciate you sharing such an amazing take on the tax saving aspect and, the CPA side, as well as your story on, as an investor. I'm hoping that all of our listeners will definitely take a lot of the knowledge and wisdom that you dropped today and apply to their business. And definitely, guys, every link that Larry just mentioned, I will definitely post them in the show notes, and make sure to follow him on LinkedIn and connect with him. He is a wealth of knowledge. And I backed that, I reached out to him a while back and we had a, great conversation about stuff like this. So, yeah, man, Larry, thank you so much for jumping on the show. And it will always be open to you whenever you're ready to jump back on.
Appreciate it, Mark. Looking forward to it.
Thank you, sir. And with that said, guys, happy investing. And
thank you for tuning in. And I hope you've gotten massive value from this episode. But before you leave, subscribe, download, and leave us your 5-star review, as we want to continue pumping you with massive value and content on the No BS Apartment Investing Podcast. Until next time.